Okay, it's good to see everybody. Okay, in case you're wondering where I'm giving class from today, I'm in Cambodia. This is Angkor Wat, the largest Vishnu temple in the world. And I'm seated in front of the temple in Angkor Wat and giving class. Pretty nice, isn't it? This way we're traveling around the world every day and giving class from a different spot. Today we're in Cambodia. Okay, so we're going to chant. Hold on a second. Chant Jai Radhamadhava. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Ballabha Kiri Badadhauti. Gopi Jana Ballabha Giri Bharadhauti. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janab Malaba Giri Bada Thauti. Gopi Janab Malaba Giri Bada Thauti. Hati Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parvatacharya Also Teta Satishi Shimad. His Divine Grace Savaya Chananada Bhaktivananda Goswami Maharishila Prabhupad Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Huidas Thakur Ki Jai. Ramse Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidvaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopikopata Sayam Kund Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Vrindavan Ki Jai, Mathuram Ki Jai, Jagadavasami Ki Jai, Yuvanamai Ki Jai, Shmati Lasi Devi Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Pananta Swamini Namani. Namaste Saraswati Devi. Gaur Vani Pachani Nivashesha Shunyavadi Pashyata Deja Tarni. Om Aganata Padanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya. Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So we're going to continue with our Nectar of Devotion study. And before that, we always chant this prayer by Srinivasacharya. Anana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarno Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakaro Radha Krishna Padara Vinda Bhajana Vandena Mataliko Vande Rupa Sanatano Raku Yago Sri Jiva Gopalako. And then we read the translation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto these six Goswamis of Vrindavan, namely Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatt Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Okay, so let us continue. We are going to share our screen. And here we go. Nectar of Devotion. So this is, of course, chapter 13. We're dealing with the five potent forms of devotional service. All right, let me just open up the screen a little more. Okay, continuing. Similarly, there is a statement about hearing and chanting the Maha Mantra. It is said that saints have been able to hear the vibrating strings of the Veena in the hands of Narada, who is always singing the glories of Lord Krishna. Now the same sound vibration has entered my ears, and I am always feeling the presence of the Supreme Personality. Gradually, I am becoming bereft of all attachment for material enjoyment. So I think everybody knows who Narada is. The name Narada means the guy who travels, or the man who travels, Narada. So, Narada Muni became Narada because, I mean, he wasn't Narada Muni before, but he became Narada because in his past life, he actually associated with the great sages during the 4 months of the rainy season when he was a little tiny boy, not that tiny, he was about 5 years old. And he took initiation from the sages and took their prasadam. And right after they left, after the 4 months of the rainy season, unfortunately, his mother, or fortunately, his mother passed away. And he wandered through the forest, singing the glories of the Lord and meditating on the Lord. The Lord appeared to him one time. And after that, he left his body, not shortly after that, but at the end of that life, he left his body and then assumed the personality of Narada Muni, who was always traveling and preaching Krishna consciousness, and chanting the holy name. Again, Srila Rupa Goswami, as described in Mathura Mandala, I remember the Lord standing by the banks of the Yamuna River, so beautiful amid the Kadamba trees, where many birds are chirping in the gardens. And these impressions are always giving me transcendental realization of beauty and bliss. This feeling about Mathura Mandala and Vrindavan, described by Rupa Goswami, can actually be felt even by the non-devotees. Wow. The places in the 84 square mile district of Mathura are so beautiful, situated on the banks of the river Yamuna, that anyone who goes there will never want to return to this material world. So do not go there if you want to return to the material world. These statements by Rupa Goswami are factually realized descriptions of Mathura and Vrindavana. All these qualities prove that Mathura and Vrindavana are situated transcendentally. Otherwise, there would be no possibility of invoking our transcendental sentiments in these places. Such transcendental feelings are aroused immediately and without fail after one arrives in Mathura or Vrindavan, and also after one comes to the temple of Radha Gokananda. You actually don't want to go back to the material world again. Unfortunately, you have to open the door and step out. Anyway, in these statements about devotional service, sometimes it may appear that the results have been overestimated, but actually there is no overestimation. Some devotees, as revealed scriptures give evidence, have had immediate results by such association, although this is not possible for all. For example, the Kumaras immediately became devotees simply by smelling the incense in the temple. Wow. Bilva Mangal Thakur simply heard about Krishna and then immediately gave up his beautiful girlfriend and started out from Mathura and Vrindavan, where he became a perfect Vaishnava. So I guess I should tell that story, since all of you may not know the story. So Bilva Mangal Thakur was a great devotee, but he had deviated from devotional service and was engaged in, I guess, an illicit relationship with his girlfriend. Anyway, whatever, girlfriend. So he was engaged in that relationship, and he had forgotten to a certain extent about his devotional service. So once upon a time, there was a big storm, and his girlfriend lived on the opposite side of the river. And so he was feeling bereft. Oh, my girlfriend, how can I live without you? And so what he did is he thought, let me cross the river. I mean, it may be storming and lightning, thunder. Krishna will protect me. And Krishna did protect him. But as he wanted to cross the river and he was looking for a boat, he could not find anybody who was there with a boat, because no boatman can be out in such weather. So he decided, I'll swim across. And it was a raging river. So he swam across the river and he grabbed hold of what he thought was a log. And he said, now I can float across the river. Then when he got to the other side, he discovered what he thought was a log was a dead body. Extremely auspicious. And then he saw that his girlfriend's house, which was surrounded by, I guess, a fence, was locked up. The fence was locked. The gate was locked. And he didn't know what he was going to do. He thought, well, I guess I have to climb over the fence. And it was a big fence. You know, it wasn't like the modern day fences you can easily climb over, because they're picket fences or something like that. But this was actually like brambles and bushes, you know, really high. And so he started climbing over the fence and he grabbed onto what he thought was a rope. He thought, well, thank God there's a rope here. You know, it's a big branch or something. And he's able to cross over and discovered that thing that he had grabbed was a snake, a venomous snake. Of course, to invite him, Krishna protect him in that instance. So, but he gets down on the other side of the wall, and by that time he's all wet, obviously. He swam across the river. Not only is he wet, but his clothes are torn and he has scratches all over his body. And, you know, he's in extreme pain. But still, he's so determined. You know, I wish I was so determined to be Krishna conscious. I wish you were also determined. So he finally knocks on her door and he thinks, wow, where's my beautiful girlfriend? Peggy Sue. No, that wasn't her. Anyway, so he knocks on the door, and she can't believe someone's at the door. She thinks, you know, who could be at the door? It's stormy out. And so she cracks open the door and looks and says, Bilva Mangal? Is that you? Huh? How did you get here? And so he describes the whole thing. And she says, phew. If you had been so determined to be Krishna conscious, you'd be a pure devotee by now. And he thought, ooh, this beautiful girlfriend is giving me some good instructions. And he understood later on that his spiritual master, I believe it was Somagiri, yeah, was speaking through the mouth of this girl. In fact, he glorified the girl later on as one of his Vartna Pradarshika or Siksha Gurus. The girl's name was Chintamani. That's a beautiful name. Chintamani is a beautiful spiritual name. So he immediately accepted that instruction the girl was giving him, or his spiritual master was giving him, through the mouth of that girl. Another point I want to make is that sometimes people ask the question that if I don't go back to Godhead, not referring to me, of course, because I'm not going back, but they say, if I'm not going back to Godhead, will my spiritual master come and get me? And the reply is, yes. However, he may come by empowering someone else to go after you. He may say, okay, you go after this rascal. So anyway, in this particular case, the spiritual master spoke through the mouth of this girlfriend. And so Vimalamangala Thakur accepted it as such and immediately left for Vrindavan. However, on the way to Vrindavan, he had another interesting incident. On the way to Vrindavan, he saw a beautiful girl who happened to be married. And remember, he's a Brahmin. So let's explain something. In India at that time, if a Brahmin asked you for something, then you would give it, even if a Brahmin asked you for your life. So, anyway, so he follows this little girl, or not little girl, she's an adult, of course. He follows this beautiful girl home, and he sees her with her husband. And the lady's saying, this guy has been following me. And husband says, oh, Brahmin Dave, Vimalamangala, what do you want? And he says, give me the blessing of being alone with your wife. And so this guy was thinking, oh my God, but I have to do it because he's a Brahmin. Such was the culture. So then he said, okay. So Vimalamangala went to a room alone with his person's wife. And by that time, he understood that his eyes kept bewildering him. Actually, it's not the fault of the eyes per se. It's the fault of one's desires. But anyway, so he asked this girl, this lady, for her hairpins. And he took the hairpins and he put out his eyes. And then he became blinded because he considered his eyes to be his enemies at that particular point because they kept bewildering him. So then he went to Vrindavan. And when he was in Vrindavan, it's very difficult to be blind in Vrindavan. I mean, he didn't have any family members, but Krishna was taking care of him. Krishna kept bringing him prasada every day. And he recognized that at a certain point. And he grabbed Krishna, the little boy who was bringing him prasada. And Krishna just like pulled himself out of his grasp. And Krishna said to him, well, he said to Krishna, he said, you can pull yourself out of my hand, but you can't pull yourself out of my heart. So this is actually Vimalamangala Thakur. And he wrote so many literatures like the Krishna Karnamrita. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu loved to read his literatures. This is one of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's favorite works, the Krishna Karnamrita. So you see that there's hope for everybody. And even if you don't make it in this lifetime, your spiritual master will make an arrangement. You're not going to be able to escape. So make it in this lifetime. Okay. So these statements are not overestimations, nor are they stories. They're actually facts, but are true for certain devotees and not necessarily apply to all. These descriptions, even if considered overestimations, must be taken as they are in order to divert our attention from the fleeting material beauty to the eternal beauty of Krishna consciousness. And for a person who is already in contact with Krishna consciousness, the described results are not unusual. Not unusual at all. Okay. Certainly many of us have experienced these results. Such scholars argue that simply by following the principles of Varnanashram, one can gradually rise to the perfections reached by practicing devotional service. But this argument is not accepted by the great authorities. Now, Varnashram means, and remember our Gita class, that everybody has a particular role in society, both spiritual and social. spiritual role means they're basically brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprastha sannyasis. Social means they're Brahmins, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras. Anyway, so it's the eightfold roles. And so, but without devotional service, there's no use to following these roles. It may make society peaceful, but there's no use to it. Lord Chaitanya also condemned this idea while he was talking with Ramananda Roy about the gradual development of devotional service. He rejected the idea of the importance of Varnashram Dharma when it was forwarded by Ramananda Roy. He said this advancement of Varna and Ashram is merely external. There is a higher principle. In Bhagavad Gita also, the Lord says that one has to give up all other principles of elevation and take simply to the method of Krishna consciousness that will help one in achieving the highest perfection of life. Now, in regard to Varnashram Dharma, there are certain aspects, what we call Daivi Varnashram Dharma, that will help our Krishna consciousness. And what are those aspects? Those aspects, or those understandings, are that we all have a body that is influenced and comfortable and functioning under certain combination of the modes of nature. That's a fact. In other words, one person will be an intellectual. Another person will be kshatriya. That means martial arts and politics, not like American politics. That's not kshatriya business. That is malecha business. It's outside of varnashrams. Another person will be a businessman. And another person will be an artist, artisan, or someone who works with their hands. Okay. And so you do that for Krishna. That's all. There's no need of designating people. No need of designating people as Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishya, and Shudras. Just understand what your propensities are. That's what Varnashram means. You know, as soon as we start designating, putting that label on people, then you start to have a society in which certain people, especially in Kali Yuga, are exploiting others. Now, that was not the case previously. Previous to this Kali Yuga, generally, the Varnashram culture was there so that everyone could work cooperatively, understand their nature, guna and karma, and their work, and everybody was equally respected. That's a fact. And people were not assigned different roles according to their birth. They were assigned different roles according to their qualities and their work, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Chaturvedam, chaturvarna maya shrishtam guna karma vibhagashaha. Then one is known as a Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, according to his qualities and work. Anyway, so, but if we try to do it now that it's Kali Yuga, it will be a way that people will use to exploit others, denigrate others. So we have to flatten things out in society. I know many people talk about, we have to institute Varnashram. Well, and Prabhupada did indicate something about Varnashram. But my understanding of that is that we have to institute a way that people can understand their nature without being pinned with a label. I'm a Brahmin. I'm a Kshatriya. You're a Shudra. And I've heard that before, even amongst devotees who have been accustomed to the nomenclature. They'd say to someone, another devotee, you're just a Shudra. You know, and in the Varnashram culture, the real Varnashram culture, it's not that you're just a Shudra. Oh, you are a Shudra and you can serve Krishna, you become Krishna conscious. In your association, you may be a Shudra Mahajan. It means a great pure devotee who's a Shudra. So as soon as you start giving labels, it becomes another way to impose something like racism or sexism. We have to get free from these labels. What do I mean? Sarvopadi Vinirmuktam. Tadbhagatvena Nirmilam. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktarujate. As described by Srila Rupa Goswami, one has to be able to... dropped my most dear gift, my phone. It's like that ring in the Lord of the Rings. My phone is like that. Anyway, so Sarvapati Vinir Muktam Tatpara Dwayna Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ujate. One has to be ready just to be free of these designations. Of course, we understand on one level that there are designations. On one level, someone's a man, a woman, someone's a kid, someone's whatever. But, you know, Vidya Vinaya Sampani Brahmani Gavi Hashani Shuri Chavis Vapakicha Panita Samadarshana. But on another level, we don't want to be seen always through that mode of passion understanding. Because in the mode of goodness understanding, according to the Bhagavad Gita, one sees a one spiritual nature in all living entities. That doesn't mean everybody's one. It means that everyone has the same type of spiritual nature. So this is really our aspiration. So as soon as we impose another method of discriminating against people or designating people or diagnosing people, that methodology will be misused by people in Kali Yuga. Remember Kali Yuga? Kali Yuga cheating is rampant. Lying is rampant. Intoxication, everything's rampant. All this disgusting stuff is rampant. People are not loyal to each other. You got more psychopaths in Kali Yuga. What is a psychopath? Sociopath. Let's use the word sociopath. Because psychopath sounds a little bit frightening. That means one who doesn't have empathy for others. They'll take any available means to get what they want from others, out of others, without any consideration of others' happiness or distress. And that's, we see that in politics in America, especially, not just in America, in so many countries, that you have sociopathic personalities. So as soon as you have designations, the sociopathology comes down again. Not with everybody, but we should see, you know, the Javinia somebody. Anyway, we have to see people equally understand the differences. You have our differences. You know, I can do things you can't do, and you can do things I can't do, obviously. But there has to be mutual respect, and we don't want to fall in the trap of giving people another designation on top of the designations they already have. You know, I'm an American, I'm male, I'm such and such age, from such and such family, such and such background, and now I'm a Brahmin. No. Gopi Bharata, Padakamala, Dasa Dasa, Anudasa. We're servants of a servant of a servant of the Lord who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan. That's our identity. That's my identity. If you ask me who I am, that's who I am. I'm not a sannyasi. I'm not a male. I'm not an American. I'm not whatever. I'm not any of these things. I am a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord. My name is the Gopis in Vrindavan. Jivela Svarupa Hoi Nitya Krishna Das. That's my Svarupa. You want to know what my Svarupa is? Nitya Krishna Das. Okay. So, don't take Varnashram that seriously. Be aware of the principle behind Varnashram. The principle is people have different propensities. Jai. And in Kali Yuga, Prabhupada said people are mixed castes of unknown origin anyway, so they have all these different propensities that are unbelievable. So, in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, obviously, 20th chapter, verse 9 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord himself says, one should execute the prescribed duties of Varna and Ashram as long as he has not developed spontaneous attachment for hearing about my pastimes and activities. In other words, the prescribed forms of varna and ashram are ritualistic ceremonies of religion intended for economic development, sense gratification, or salvation. All these things are recommended for persons who have not developed Krishna consciousness. Whoops. In fact, all such activities are recommended in the revealed scriptures only to bring one to the point of Krishna consciousness. So, Sometimes you may want to apply it to the general public or something like that. But even so, I would rather see everyone as a potential servant of Krishna. Not see, hey, you're a Brahman. But one who has already developed spontaneous attachment for Krishna does not require to execute the duties prescribed in the scriptures. Now, we're talking about duties in reference to all this Varnashram ritual stuff. But duties in relationship to Krishna, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. All righty. So we are finished with that chapter. Going pretty quickly. The Nectar of Devotion. I wonder which book we'll do after the Nectar of Devotion. Anyway, it's going to go slower as we get to more detailed knowledge in the Nectar of Devotion. You'll see that. Devotional qualifications. Some scholars recommend that knowledge and renunciation are important factors for elevating oneself to devotional service, but actually, that is not a fact. Actually, the cultivation of knowledge and renunciation, which are favorable for achieving a footing in Krishna consciousness, may be accepted in the beginning, but ultimately, they may also come to be rejected, for devotional service is dependent on nothing other than the sentiment or desire for such service. It requires nothing more than sincerity. Of course, sincerity means willingness to do what Krishna wants. Not just, I'm very sincere. Because in America, when you say, oh, he's very sincere, that means probably means he's like hopeless, useless, dysfunctional, everything like that. It's a euphemism. It's like saying a girl has a nice personality, it means she's probably ugly as hell. So we have to understand what Prabhupada means by sincerity. Sincerity means the willingness to have faith and do what Krishna wants. That's all. That's really sincerity. You can't say, I'm sincere, but I'm in Maya anyway. So let's explain this a little bit. Cultivation of knowledge. Sometimes people become very much enamored with the cultivation of knowledge. Especially about Krishna, and they want to show off their knowledge, and it increases their false ego. And there's that example of the Brahmin who was illiterate in Lord Chaitanya's time, who really, as we say, is illiterate, couldn't move, couldn't read, and he was simply following the order of his spiritual master with full dedication and full faith, and trying to page through the pages of the Bhagavad Gita, and he achieved love of God. And basically he had no knowledge, but the knowledge was revealed to him. What is it stated in the Bhagavad Gita? Tesham, no one knows it. Tesham, Satara, Yuktanam. No one knows that verse. All right, forget about it. Back to the Bhagavad Gita. Tesham, Satara, Yuktanam, Bhajatam, Pritipur, Vagam, Vidami, Buddhi, Yogam, Tam, Yenamam, Upayanti, Te. What does that mean? For those who are devoted and worship me with love, I give them the knowledge by which they can come to me. And then as far as renunciation, material renunciation has nothing to do with devotional service. For example, some of our greatest devotees, whoops, and then we lost our, okay, we almost lost everything. Symptom of ecstasy, my computer is feeling ecstatic. So some of our greatest devotees are married with children, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I mean, his books are perhaps the most amazing books. Prabhupada's are very amazing too, but in Bhaktivinoda Thakur, most voluminous his publication. So amazing poetry, stories, so much. I mean, you can't even read all of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's works in a lifetime, at least I couldn't. Even if they were all translated into English, and most of them are. So, material renunciation is not required. Renunciation in the sense of doing what Krishna wants, that is accepted. That is real renunciation, spiritual renunciation. And cultivation of knowledge in terms of knowing what Krishna wants, that is actually helpful. More favorable for devotional service. Okay, next chapter. It is the opinion of expert devotees that mental speculation and the artificial austerities of yoga practice may be favorable for becoming liberated from material contamination But they will also make one's heart harder and harder. Ooh. Very dangerous. Even if one reads a lot of books about Krishna, thinks that they are very intelligent, that will make your heart harder. And if you engage in austerities, you become proud of your austerities, and you look down upon others, then your heart will be harder. We're supposed to soften our hearts. They will not help at all in the progress of devotional service. These processes are therefore not favorable for entering into the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Wow. Actually, Krishna consciousness devotional service itself is the only way of advancing in devotional life. Devotional service is absolute. It is both the cause and the effect. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause and effect of all that be, and to approach Him, the absolute, the process of devotional service, which is also absolute, has to be adopted. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord Himself. One can understand me only through devotional service. In beginning his teaching of the Gita, the Lord said to Arjuna, because you are my devotee, I shall teach these secrets to you. Vedic knowledge means ultimately to understand the Supreme Lord in the process for entering into his kingdom, is devotional service. That it's accepted, what do we say, sambandha and abhideya. That is accepted by all authentic scriptures. Mental speculators neglect the process of devotional service, and by simply trying to defeat others in philosophical research, they fail to develop the ecstasy of devotion. In the 11th canto, 20th chapter, verse 31, of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says, "My dear Uddhava, for persons who are seriously engaged in my service, the cultivation of philosophical speculation and artificial renunciation are not very favorable. When a person becomes my devotee, he automatically attains the fruits of the renunciation of material enjoyment, and he gets sufficient knowledge to understand the absolute truth." That is the test of advancement in devotional service. A devotee cannot be in darkness because the Lord shows him special favor and enlightens him from within. Isn't that what we said? Tesham satavi yuktanam. Isn't it? Also Tesham. Imanam Kampartam Hamagyan of Yam Tamaha Masham Atma Bhavashto Yanaditaina Vashvatam. Hopefully you remember that verse. I dwell in their hearts, destroying the ignorance. Anyway. Imanam Kampartam, I show them special favor. So here Prabhupada is actually, and Srupa Goswami, who is actually simply citing those two verses in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Sada Yujanam, Yujana Ivana Kampartam, in a different way. Remember those verses? 10 and 11, 10th chapter, Gita, read it again. If you forgot your Bhagavad Gita, you're in trouble. In the 11th canto, 20th chapter, verse 32 and 33 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord further instructs Uddhava, "My dear friend, the profits derived from fruit of activities, austerities, the culture of philosophical knowledge, renunciation, the practice of mystic yoga, charity, and all similar auspicious activities are automatically achieved by my devotees, those who are simply attached to me by loving service. These devotees have everything at their disposal, but they desire nothing outside of my devotional service. If ever a devotee should desire some material profit, like promotion to the heavenly planets or some spiritual profit, to go to the Vaikunthas by my causeless mercy, his desires are very easily fulfilled." Wow. Hopefully we don't ask Krishna for anything like that. It's interesting how people ask Krishna for so many foolish material things. Of course, there's that example I have given many times before, that once upon a time there was a lady in the forest and she was collecting firewood and she was putting the firewood on her head, because in India the ladies could balance things on their head. And Prabhupada actually said this is very good for posture. The ladies should learn. I've seen ladies walk with big pots of water for many miles, and they have perfect posture. So anyway, this lady was putting firewood on her head, all these different sticks on her head, kindling, whatever. And somehow she tripped, poor lady, and these sticks fell to the ground. And she began to cry. Because, picking up all the sticks after you spent so long putting them on your head, she was crying and crying, Govinda, Krishna, Krishna, Govinda. Finally, Krishna hears her prayers. Of course, Krishna heard the prayers in the beginning, but finally, Krishna appears and he says, My dear devotee, you're crying my name. And anyone who cries out my name should really have whatever he or she wants. What is your most heartfelt desire? And she said, Can you please pick up this wood and put it back on my head? And he does it, and he goes away. And that's pretty much our situation where we're praying to Krishna. Whether we may be praying for a new car or praying for something mundane. Actually, we can pray for other people's Krishna consciousness or their health. I mean, that's fine. But for mundane things, please, Krishna, let me become rich. Actually, a person who is developing Krishna consciousness and still has some attachment to material enjoyment would soon be freed from such a tendency by regularly discharging devotional service under the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master. And actually, Krishna may make that material possession distasteful to the person. It may become like a burden, and the disciple or devotee is thinking, Oh my God, why did I ask for that? Oh my God. Okay. Srila Rupa Goswami then recommends that one should not be attached to material sense enjoyment, but should accept everything enjoyable which is in relationship to Krishna. For example, eating is necessary. And if one wants some palatable dishes to satisfy his sense of taste. So in that case, for the satisfaction of Krishna, rather than for the satisfaction of the tongue, some palatable dishes may be prepared and offered to Krishna. Then it is renunciation. Let the palatable dishes be prepared, but unless they are offered to Krishna, one should not accept them for eating. This vow of rejecting anything which is not offered to Krishna is actually renunciation. And by such renunciation, one is able to satisfy the demands of the senses. So just like I am thinking, let me make some nice buckwheat to offer to Krishna. Course, no sweets. Actually, my deities are pretty austere. Unfortunately, oh, I mean, they get sweet fruits sometimes. But I guess it's like Sanatana Goswami and the bread balls offered to Madan Gopal, Madan Mohan. Anyway, if they start complaining, I guess I'll have to give them something more. The impersonalists who try to avoid everything material may undergo severe. That's why I should travel so the deities can eat more and eat better things. Krishna, you hear that? Should let me travel again, and that way you could enjoy much more opulent prasadam. So the impersonalists who try to avoid everything material, Krishna's smiling. So the impersonalists who try to avoid everything material may undergo severe austerities, but they miss the opportunity of being engaged in the service of the Lord. Thus, their renunciation is not sufficient for perfection. There are many instances where following such artificial renunciation without any contact with devotional service, the impersonalist again fell down and became attracted to material contamination. Obviously, we have to understand why are you doing all these austerities? And you're not doing it from your heart, you're just doing it to get liberated. Then obviously, even after you experience a little bit of liberation, you're going to become really dry. Just like, what's the nectar? Where's the nectar? And then some devotee will go by. And you'll become attracted to that, hopefully, or you'll fall down to material enjoyment. There are many supposed renouncers, even at the present moment, who officially become sannyasis or renouncers and outwardly claim that spiritual existence is truth and material existence is untruth. Brahma Satya Jagat Nitya. That's their motto. In this way, that's exactly what that means. Brahma Satya, spirituality is true, material world is false. That's the translation. In this way, artificially, they make a show renunciation of the material world. However, because they cannot reach the point of devotional service, they fail to achieve the goal, then again come back to material activities, such as philanthropic work and political agitation. There are many examples of so-called sannyasis who gave up the world as untruth, but again came to the material world because they were not seeking their real repose at the lotus feet of the Lord. One should not give up anything which can be utilized in the service of the Lord. That is the secret of devotional service. I guess there's no retirement for me. Anything that can be utilized in advancing Krishna consciousness and devotional service should be accepted and must be accepted. For instance, we are using many machines for the advancement of our present Krishna consciousness movement. Machines like typewriters, and many of you have never seen a typewriter, dictating machines, tape recorders. Many of you have not seen dictating machines. Many of you have not seen tape recorders. Microphones you've seen, and airplanes you've seen. Sometimes people ask us, why are you utilizing material products if you condemn the advancement of materialist civilization? But actually, we do not condemn. We simply ask people to do whatever they are doing in Krishna consciousness. This is the same principle on which in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna advised Arjuna to utilize his fighting abilities in devotional service. Similarly, we are utilizing these machines in Krishna's service. Without such sentiment for Krishna or Krishna consciousness, for Krishna or Krishna consciousness, we can accept everything. If the typewriter can be utilized for advancing in Krishna consciousness movement, we must accept it. Similarly, the dictating machine or any other machine must be used. Jai, computers. Our vision is that Krishna is everything. Krishna is the cause and effect, and nothing belongs to us. Krishna's things must be used in the service of Krishna. That is our vision. This does not mean, however, that we should give up the principles of discharging devotional service or neglect abiding by the rules and regulations prescribed therein. In other words, one could think, well, everything belongs to Krishna. Everything is meant to be used in Krishna's service. Marijuana is meant to be used. No. It is not meant to be used in Krishna's service unless you have terminal cancer. Yeah. Maybe used in the proper way at the proper time. Like if someone is in extreme pain and terminal cancer patient, maybe. In the neophyte stage of devotion, one must follow all the principles regulated by the authority of the spiritual master. The acceptance and rejection of things should always be in pursuance of the devotional principles. Not that one can independently manufacture some idea of what should be accepted or rejected. The spiritual master is the visible manifestation of Krishna. It's necessary, therefore, to direct the devotee on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What can be utilized and what cannot be utilized? The spiritual master must never be carried away by an accumulation of wealth or a large number of followers. A bona fide spiritual master will never become like that. Actually, the more followers you have, the more you have people who don't follow you. But anyway, the more headaches you get. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was asked one time, how many disciples do you have, Guru Maharaj? And he said, I have four. My two arms and my two legs. But sometimes, and he actually got very frustrated with his disciples because basically he asked them to go to the Western world to preach Krishna consciousness, and only one of them did it. But sometimes if a spiritual master is not properly authorized and only on his own initiative becomes a spiritual master, he may be carried away by an accumulation of wealth and large numbers of disciples. His is not a very high grade of devotional service. If a person is carried away by such achievements, then his devotional service becomes slackened. One should therefore strictly adhere to the principles of disciplic succession. Let's see if we have time to finish this. It's quite a large thing. Okay, we're going to take some questions. Okay, let me just mark this in my book so I know where to continue. Tomorrow, hold on a second. We don't want to lose. things in place. One secondito. Krishna conscious person. Okay, so let us take some questions now. Hold on a second. And let me let you ask your questions. Okay, I think, let me make sure it's unmuted. Okay, who has a question? Any of you wonderful Vaishnavas or Vaishnavis have a question?
Krishna, Gurudev, this is Rishikesh.
Rishikesh, okay, so what's your question?
I had a question about Karna, you know. The Karna was, basically, his nature was Kshatriya. But even at that time, during Krishna's time also, he was discriminated as a Shudra or something like that.
Yes.
Why is it like that?
Why is it like that? Because they actually had forgotten the principles of Varnashram. Because Krishna himself elaborated on those principles of guna and karma. And I think it was Bhishma Dev who actually recognized that they had deviated from the actual principles of Varnashram. It's not that everybody in the previous age was following Varnashram properly. In this particular case, they were not following Varnashram properly. It was discriminated against. And even we find the Pandavas discriminated against. And there was a misunderstanding of Varnashram. So that's really what was happening. I cannot excuse the Pandavas, especially Arjuna and others, for discriminating against him. But it was also Krishna's will that he'd be discriminated against so that he would get angry, become the foe of Arjuna, and all those pastimes would take place in battle, etc. But yes, it was wrong. It was definitely 100% wrong for him to be discriminated against. And Duryodhana, on the other hand, was not free from bad discrimination, but he gave Karna a position because he wanted to basically bribe Karna so that Karna would fight on his behalf because he needed a good bowman to fight against Arjuna. So it's not, you'll find in the Mahabharata that Duryodhana sometimes actually does call Karna a Shudra. And he says, it's by my mercy you have actually attained, you know, your kingdom. So anyway, there was a misunderstanding of Varnashram. Even in other ages, people made mistakes. You know, the Treta Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga, sorry, people made a lot of mistakes. So, good question. Anybody else want to ask a question?
Hare Krishna Gurudev.
Oh, Sumukh.
Yes, please ask my humble wishes. Gurudev, I have one small question. You were talking about Vilobanga Thakur. And he actually blind himself.
Yeah.
Then you also told us that he also wrote so many books. How can a blind man write books?
He has a mouth and he has someone to write down when he's speaking. Like Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva didn't actually write books. You know, we talk about Vyasadeva as the writer of the Vedic literatures. No, he spoke the Vedic literatures. I mean, there's some story about Ganesh writing down, but in any case, these personalities dictated. Just like Srila Prabhupada, most of Prabhupada's books were dictated into a dictaphone, you know, recorder. You know, so I can't say that Prabhupada literally wrote his books. In the beginning, he used a typewriter. So even Prabhupada used a typewriter to type. Obviously, you have to use a typewriter to type. So, yeah.
Dictation. Second question, yeah. Gurudev. when a devotee writes a book and we read the book and we get spiritual enlightenment, sometimes the same devotee falls down. So shall we continue to read that book?
That's a good question. It depends on whether he was deviating when he wrote the book. You understand? But basically, I would not accept that particular book on the same level as someone who is actually stable and steady and devotional service and never fell down. You understand? I wouldn't take... I mean, I'm not going to make specific reference. I can think of some books right now. There's some books, there's some devotees in our movement who were in our movement, who fell down, who wrote books about different rituals like Ekadashi. And then they left and fell down from the movement. So I don't, it may indicate that they didn't have the right understanding of the practice and philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Generally, if one deviates or falls down, it indicates they weren't on such a high level of devotional service. If someone has some accidental deviation, like, you know, tomorrow if we find some mook, you smoked a marijuana cigarette, but then... but just once. I know. I'm just giving an example. But just like once, by accident, you didn't know what it was, and you just... then that's a different thing. But if there's a premeditated, continual deviation from Krishna consciousness, then you would question, actually, the person's standard when he actually wrote the book. You know, if someone actually writes Vaishnava literature and he deviates, there's every possibility that his presentation of the Vaishnava literature was tinged with some sort of misunderstanding. I mean, I don't want to criticize anyone in particular, but the books I read about Krishna, I mean, because I read books about mundane things too, about psychology and everything like that. That I don't require that people be on a high standard to write books like that. I read books about quantum mechanics. I don't require that the professor who wrote the book about quantum mechanics be on a very high devotional level. But as far as books about Krishna consciousness, I basically only read books written by people who I know are actually on a very high level of devotional service. Otherwise, it just doesn't strike me. I don't. And in general, when reading about Krishna's intimate loving exchanges, you know, the Vrindavan Leela, at that point, I will only read literatures written by great devotees. You know, devotees who I know are on, you know, acharyas, great devotees like that. You know, so like books about like Lalita Madhava, Vidagdha Madhava, Rai Rupa Goswami, Krishna Karnamrita, written by Bilba Mangal Thakur. I mean, I know that they're in a high position. But I have to be very careful when I'm listening or reading books about Krishna's intimate pastimes in Vrindavan, because it really needs to be someone who's actually an absolutely pure devotee to present them properly. Anyway, my humble or not so humble position. So, good question. Okay. Another question from one of our...
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Dandavat Pranam.
Did you get your beads yet?
No, not yet, Maharaj. No, it's still, I think, on its way. It's okay. That's okay, no problems. Maharaj, my question was about, you know, some people accepting gurus, because you know how we know there's like four major sampradayas. But then, you know, sometimes I find particularly people from Fiji where they might accept a guru from somebody who doesn't actually belong to one of those sampradayas, but they're following it religiously, you know what I mean? But but there might not be a bona fide guru. What happens to such an individual who is still following, thinking that they are doing the right thing, but it's not quite the right disciplic succession?
That's interesting. Well, that question is raised in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, basically. What is the position of one? Doesn't mention gurus there. Of one who follows, doesn't follow the Vedic literatures, but worships according to his own faith or like that. So it depends on what mode of nature that guru is in and what he's teaching. Obviously, unless he's connected to Krishna consciousness in some disciplic succession, they're not going to become spiritualized by connection with that guru. They may become, I mean, there's gurus in Fiji who teach about black magic too, right?
Yeah.
Particularly, they go to the Muslims for that in Fiji. You know, there's tantric gurus in Fiji. There's gurus who teach you to worship the demigods. But really, the point is they're not following the Vedic literatures. They may be taking quotations out of the Vedic literatures, but they're not following. They're taking things out of context. And that means what they're doing is under the modes of nature. And so that's specifically dealt with in the beginning of the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Divisions of Faith. They may be in ignorance or passion or goodness, depending on whether their guru is in ignorance, passion, or goodness.
Right.
What can I say?
Yeah, no, I understand.
But at least it may be a step up. On the other hand, that they're accepting that something's greater than themselves, there's something transcendental. Just like Prabhupada talked about in primitive cultures, people will worship the sun or the moon or various aspects of nature, which is not transcendental, but it's a step to understanding that there's something greater than themselves.
Right.
So I'm not throwing away the whole conception completely. What I'm saying is that it can be useful for them rather than not worshiping anybody. But at the same time, they may be getting a bogus philosophy like we're all God, you're God, you know, whatever these people teach.
Even the regulative principles, sometimes they don't follow all of them or, you know, partially and all that sort of thing. So you're not sure if they are really progressing. Oh,
they really like Kaaba.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah.
I mean, if you go to any mandali, you know, basically they have Ramayan mandalis. That means they worship Lord Ram. So they'll chant Sita Ram, and then drink kava the rest of the night. So I definitely don't think that there's any spiritual upliftment in that. Of course, chanting Ram's name, there's always some benefit. But as far as their guru is concerned, the guru is not helping them at all.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your question. And right now, I'd like to make an announcement to everybody. And this is interesting. Let me just write these things down. So, as everybody, this announcement is only for people from Australia, New Zealand, and Fiji. And Europe. Okay. Not for you Americans. You Americans can... Anyway, do whatever you want to do. But this is for Australia. So as most of you know, the celebration of the Vyas Puja is next Tuesday. Not next Tuesday, sorry. It's the 27th of this month, 27th of October, which is the week from the following Tuesday. Okay. So here we're going to be having online for Australia, New Zealand, and Fiji, and Europe, all at the same time. So what that means, that beginning, and let me get all this calculation right. Now, first we're talking about New South Wales, okay? New South Wales, South Wales. So that beginning at 6 p.m. at night next Tuesday, on Zoom and on Facebook, 6 p.m., Tuesday the 27th, 6 p.m., I'm going to be online and the devotees, wherever. So that's 6 p.m. for New South Wales. And so for Brisbane area, which is a different time zone, it'll be 5 p.m. Someone can correct me if I get these time zones wrong. And for New Zealand, it's 8 p.m. Right? I'm right so far. And for Fiji, it's 7 p.m. And for Central European time, it's 9 a.m. on Tuesday the 27th. And for those of you in America, you'll be asleep. That's okay, because we'll have a separate ceremony for those of you in America. So this is just for those. Don't worry, I'm not neglecting the Americans. You're okay too. So this is just for those. I'm going to reiterate, and we're going to put it out in a notice where you can click on it and everything like that. But this is just a little advance notice. On the 27th, reiterating, of this month, which is October, New South Wales, Sydney area, let's use the Sydney area, 6 p.m. on Zoom, Brisbane area, Queensland, is 5 p.m. on Zoom, and New Zealand is 8 p.m., and Fiji is 7 p.m. And so you can, those of you who are in Fiji can spread the news. You know, Sumuk's there from Fiji. I don't know if anyone else is from Fiji right now online. But I'll get in touch with Goku Bandhu and he can spread the news. So Fiji is 7 p.m. and Europe is 9 a.m. So it's all on Tuesday the 27th. How about that? Which is actually the day, which is the correct day. It's an Ekadashi, too. However, in America, it's a different day, but I'm not going to even mention it because it's all confusing for everybody. In America, it's Monday is my appearance day, and we may be celebrating on Sunday, but forget that I just said that because and most of the devotees online are from, what time is that for you? Just figure it out. Champika wants to know what time that is for me. Central European time is 6 hours later than us. So if you take it as 9 a.m., what is 9 minus 6? You teach mathematics. 3 a.m., good. Good, you get an A in mathematics. So 3 a.m., which is an austerity for me, but I don't mind that. And it's really not for the people in the United States to watch. They can just sleep and enjoy their beauty rest during that time. But I think it's important because, anyway, so we can reach out. Basically, the devotees can make their offerings and I can actually hear their offerings and everything like that. It would be nice. So I may add on something onto my Zoom so I can have 500 people. But normally 100 is the limit on Zoom, but I can do an add-on just for that day. So that'll be that. Okay? So that's the announcement. And I guess we'll see everybody for the Nectar Devotion class tomorrow evening. Okay? Thank you all very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Ki Jai. Hari Bol.